Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Free Odyssey app.
Welcome in City Council Member Mark Squilla, who I know introduced, what did I report a month ago, Mark, that you you had introduced about a dozen or more bills to authorize this. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'll be honest, because I can't help myself. I'm for this. I think it's a great idea for Philadelphia. It's $1.3 billion infused into the city. But so many of my friends and neighbors, they say, oh, this could be bad for Philadelphia. We're going to mess it up. What about transportation? So you say what?
Well, I want to say this has been going on. We've been discussing this proposal for over 2 years. Mm-hmm. We've had meetings with all the stakeholders, including the Chinatown neighborhood, the Lost West. A lot of stakeholders like Jefferson Hospital, SEPTA, and so forth. And during that process, we heard a lot of concerns, you know, what the concerns would be if an arena proposal was at that location, what we could do to offset those concerns. And I think through that process and through the legislative process that we've had, we put together, I believe, a lot of safeguards and plus the CBA to really address a lot of the concerns that we heard from the communities and to make sure that if this arena is developed here, that it would hopefully spur additional development along our East Market corridor where we have, you know, a lot of challenges right now. And that by doing that, putting protections in place on the adjoining neighborhoods so that, you know, the fears of gentrification or displacement won't be there. Small businesses that are in those communities may not be affected. So our goal was, and I said this all along, that I would not support the legislation unless I believed there was enough safeguards and the CBA dollars to the community in place before being able to move it forward.
So talk about the CBA dollars. At one point when, you know, I know City Council was going back and forth, and I heard that, you know, Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment, which owns the Sixers, they had agreed to these community, basically it's like community impact money. Right. So that you're a little bit displaced or whatever. That's how I infer it goes. But that it was 50. It was 50 million. That's no, we want 100 million. No, we want 300 million. It's like, show me the money. So, you know, how does that work? And how do you figure out a true formula that helps, you know, deal with the impact? And then my other question is there a little bit of wiggle room in there? Like, let's say, you know, there's one area that, man, this is really impacting such and such, because I don't have a crystal ball. You don't. So how do you figure that dollar amount out?
Well, they came in with initially $50 million as their CBA and, you know, where that money was going to be spent. One of the major things that I believe from talking to all the stakeholders was people wanted an arena type district, like similar to South Philadelphia, where they have the stadium district. And they thought that by having that, they could have resources directly going to the community who decide what should be done in those areas. Instead of the city saying, we know what's good for you, we're going to do this, the other thing. So there, we created what is going to be known as the arena authority, and a municipal authority. And in that municipal authority, they will be getting resources every year to be able to determine what the impacts are. But beside that, you know, we created what is known as a business interruption fund. So during the times of construction, demolition, and even events, there'll be a fund for businesses who show a loss in revenue or a loss in profits because of these actions, that we would be able to offset that through this business interruption fund. We also created, and the mayor was a big help on this, the 76ers came up with an additional $10 million to make it $60 million. But the mayor added an additional $20 million for affordable housing. Affordable housing was a big component of concerns in the Chinatown community. And they believe that, you know, possible displacement or gentrification because of the arena would push a lot of people out of the Chinatown community. So the mayor, what really got this over the hump was an additional $20 million. So we have $80 million to use into that community, funded the $20 million to really engage and do affordable housing projects in the Chinatown community. So that was a big plus for a lot of the members of council to be able to support that and therefore help with the concerns of displacement and gentrification. And I think those were the keys to finally get enough members of council to vote in support of this legislation.
So, you know, at one point I did hear a push for $100 million, and I should have had my little calculator. Where are we at 60?
60 plus 20, we're at $80 million.
So do I hear 100? Do you think it'll go to 100? Will they agree?
I don't think there'll be a change at this point. I think, you know, it came out of committee last week at $80 million. I think that the members who voted on it out of committee, majority of them will vote on it again coming up tomorrow. And I believe that would be the end of the legislative process. But I do believe there's still a lot more work to do. You know, you hear concerns about, you know, transportation and getting 40% of the people to take public transit. We created a transit committee under the authority that would have to come up with a plan. The plan has to be approved by PennDOT before the Sixers could even get a permit to develop and build the arena. So all this work still has to be in place, even if they agree to end up purchasing this property through Macerich, which is the fashion district. And by doing that, they would also own half of the gallery or the fashion district, along with the properties on the south side of Market Street. And one of the big proponents of that was also to build up the south side of Market Street with retail and residential to help the blight that we currently have on that East Market corridor.
So just so Councilman Mark Squilla, just so everybody knows what we're talking about, it's an 18,500 seat arena, right? And it would replace that section of what's known as the Fashion District Mall. So it's like Market, Filbert, 10th and 11th Street. Yeah, where the old Strawbridges was, right? On Market Street.
It's Fashion District. It's the western part of the Fashion District between 10th and 11th. That block would be demolished over top of Jefferson Station, which is the big transit hub, right? Where our regional rail comes in.
You come right in there. And then Dan had a great question that he texted me this is a great question, Dan. The so-called Disney hole that seems like it's been there forever at the corner of 8th and Market. What about that? Because that's such an eyesore, too. What about that piece of land?
Yeah, I mean, that is owned by a separate organization. Mm-hmm. The Goldenberg Group is the main owners of that property. We've been in contact with them, and they, you know, have been saying that there was really nobody was really interested in that site until recently. And they believe that if the arena development is approved, then that moves forward, that they have a possibility of a hotel on that site. So that's yet to be seen. There's been the last proposal on that site was a casino. I don't know if you remember back when they were doing the casino push. That was the last possible proposal for that site. But meeting with them recently is a proposal for a possible hotel there if this project is to move forward.
So I know that the team owners, they agreed to pay an average of, it was reported, $6 million a year in lieu of property and some of the use and occupancy taxes. And opponents have said, hey, this reduces their tax burden. So, you know, I want to ask about that. And just when we hear, for me, I'll be honest, Mark, when I hear about, you know, $1.3 billion being infused into Center City, I think that's a win-win. That's my bottom line on it. We need something. And this is, to me, it could potentially be a game changer if done correctly. But what about the tax burden? And are they reducing that? And whether or not our tax dollars are going to fund this?
I mean, there's two sides of that argument. Mm-hmm. One is that there was a state law that was passed in 2001 when they were building the Lincoln Financial Field and Citizens Bank Park. Arenas never paid any taxes. A lot of them were built by the municipalities at that time. And so what the goal was by passing that law is that there would be a pilot, a payment in lieu of taxes, in order to get some tax revenue back to the municipality instead of having it be tax-free. So what the state said was that you had to negotiate with the municipality to pay taxes, and our taxes are split between the school district and the city of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. UNO is an additional tax that goes to the school district.
Yes.
So the city negotiated with the Sixers to get $6 million. It's an average of $6 million over the life of the 30 years or so. But that is equal to or just about the same as all three arenas now pay in down in South Philadelphia, which is the Wells Fargo Center, the Link, and the Citizens Bank Park.
So
the city looked at that and said, all right, we're getting, for one new arena, we're getting just as much as three arenas in taxes, plus the current value of taxes paid now where the Fashion District is and where the Greyhound Station is a little over $1 million.
Yeah.
So to us, we're gaining $5 million a year in taxes for that area. If nothing's done, we'd only get $1 million, which is the current value, and who knows what's going to happen to the Fashion District. And by this development, we'll get additional money. And they're saying if the value of the arena is $1 billion and you paid full taxes on what that value is, but what is the real assessment of an arena? You know, how do we go through and do that since we don't really assess them? And then the other thing is, if you build a brand new building, you're going to get a 10-year tax abatement.
Yeah.
So for 10 years, you don't pay any taxes, you know? So, you know, people have that argument. And yes, if it's assessed at $1 billion, after 10 years, you would start to get additional revenue. But this is guaranteed for 30 years, this revenue. And so by doing that, the state law requires them to stay there for the life of the lease. They could sell it, but they can't move. They still have to have that arena venue available for 30 years. So they give up the right for that arena to move for 30 years, and then they can renegotiate after that.
Dan Borowski, you had a question, our executive
producer. Yeah, so, Mark, I hail from Indianapolis. I grew up here in New Jersey, but in Indianapolis, they had the RCA Dome for a time that was actually connected to the convention center, which was connected to an absolutely beautiful hotel. And there was never a day that they didn't have a cheerleading convention or some other kind of convention that was held either at the center or at the arena, and that area was always, you know, very busy. But I spent a lot of time on Reddit, way more than I should admit, and the people there, one of the biggest counters is, well, when the lights are dark in the arena and the Sixers don't have a game that night, well, that area is still going to be dead. So I just want to hear the councilman's vision. Councilman Mark Scuola, what's your vision as to how things look when there's not a game at night at the arena?
Well, that was an important part of the conversation early on. And if you looked at their earlier proposal, they had their bowl very low, right above the SEPTA station, Jefferson Station. And so part of the concern was that a scenario that you just presented, that what happens when there's no events. So the CDR, we had the civic design review, and the proposal was to lift the bowl up so that you could have retail and activity 24/7, you know, 7 days a week at that location. So the design team from the development, 76 Development Corp, raised the bowl up to allow for active use 7 days a week on that site, even if there's no events. So that was a big portion of getting them to make that change in order to get support and concern, not only for the East Market Corridor, but, you know, Center City District. When we talked to them, it was a big concern because the gallery or the Fashion District themselves, a lot of times the only way to get in there is through the corners, right? We always had it walled off because everybody wanted an enclosed mall-type feature. Well, the same thing with this. If you wall off a whole block, you know, that would make that area a lot less visible for the commercial use. So the goal was to lift the bowl up and allow for retail activity and access 7 days a week through that center, even when there's no events.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds amazing,
yeah, it really does.
I will say. Something else that I feel, great Philadelphia tradition, and I'm honored, my husband and I host the annual Mummers Day Parade. We will be again January 1st. I know for you, Shooting Stars, Fancy Brigade, you know how to strut your stuff. Is that something that, I don't know, we need to have more recruitment to keep the Mummers alive and recruit? You know, we have such a great, diverse base of young people in our city. Just talking to a friend, Anne Marie, born and raised here, and she was talking about the fact that we need to give the kids something to do. I don't know, maybe have more rec centers, teach them the strut, and get more and more Philadelphia children, right?
You know?
Yeah, playing instruments.
Well, I think, you know, Philadelphia is a great diverse city of Philadelphia, and I think having people understand the Mummers Parade is a difficult thing in the first place, but then getting those folks involved in the parade is something that has been a conversation with the Mummers for the last 10 years or so. And they have done it. Some of the clubs have brought in some Caribbean culture folks in their events. There's some Mexican people now involved in an organization within the Mummers. So it is starting to go. The problem with the Mummers Parade is that it's really, you know, people are used to getting paid to go into parades. Mm-hmm. The Mummers Parade, the people pay themselves to put their show together. Mm-hmm. And then when you win, all you win is the bragging right that you came in first prize, right? You're not getting paid for it, and there's no resources that actually come from it, but just the pride of participating in it. Mm-hmm. So that's a mindset change for some folks that go into some of the other parades where they are, you know, actually they get paid for it. So, it's an active challenge for the Mummers to do that, but they have put forth an effort to start recruiting and getting more and more diverse people involved in the parade itself. And even with the LGBTQ community, because back in the 70s, they used to have what was called at that time the female impersonator group. And then, you know, several years ago, they had drag queens that were part of the parade. And so active also working in that community to recruit into the Mummers Parade.
Nice. You know, I love the backstory. I remember reporting on your grandmother, Nina, and how you have always believed in raising money to support orphans. Because she was somebody who came to this country as an orphan, emigrated from Italy. I love your backstory, Mark Squilla.
Well, thank you. And it was always important to me, as not only, you know, for people who are coming here. And yeah, she came over. I mean, it was an arranged marriage with my grandfather, who she didn't know. And she had seven children. He ended up dying young. And my mother, who was in high school, and her sister had to quit school in order to work to help raise, you know, the children that they had. And I remember one of the proudest moments for my mother was that she was able to graduate high school when she was 75 years old. And that's something she always wanted to do. And, you know, it puts sort of life in perspective and how, you know, you do the things you need to do in order to get by, but also appreciate the things that you have. And, you know, as we go, we become a more materialistic society. Yeah. Sometimes we don't think of those things and what it means to be part of a family and how that family upbringing guides you and puts you into a direction where you look at things differently. And, you know, sometimes we lose that. So we always want to keep that perspective also and understanding that, you know, family is a big part of how we act as human beings. And we have people to lean on when you have a strong family commitment. And it just means a lot to me and, you know, part of sometimes why I guess I deal with things the way I do.
Beautifully said. Philadelphia City Councilman Mark Squilla, thanks for being here today, and we appreciate you. We'll be watching what happens tomorrow in City Council. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.